Welcome to Heath Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone. This is my speech from the Anderson Reed Group meeting in May of 2022. My general metric for determining what counts was something that was recently promoted by powerful people with institutional power that was widely accepted by the average person. So something like belief in the Loch Ness Monster and astrology is not enough. My general definition of conspiracy theory is an explanation for an event or situation that invokes a conspiracy by sinister and powerful groups, often political in motivation, when other explanations are more probable. First conspiracy theory that has been debunked: Russiagate 1.0. Hillary Clinton, on the presidential debate stage, said that 17 intelligence agencies have confirmed that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. The correction was issued by the New York Times 1 year later, June 29th, 2017. A White House memo on Monday about President Trump's deflections and denials about Russia referred incorrectly to the source of an intelligence assessment that said Russia orchestrated hacking attacks during last year's presidential election. The assessment was made by four intelligence agencies: the DNI, the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA. The assessment was not approved by all 17 organizations in the American intelligence community. So only the ones with the worst track record in the entire country. Here are some quotes from the Robert Mueller report, which we were told for so long was just about to come out with something big. Any day now, the walls are closing in, Trump's going to be impeached, etc. His impeachment later was related to Ukrainian collusion, had nothing to do with Russia. Quote from the Mueller report: "The investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. persons knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation. The office did not identify evidence of a connection between Manafort's sharing polling data and Russia's interference in the election, which had already been reported by U.S. media outlets at the time of August 2nd meeting. The investigation did not establish that Manafort otherwise coordinated with the Russian government on its election interference efforts. The investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Finally, the investigation did not, however, yield evidence sufficient to sustain any charge subject to the direction or control of the government of Russia or any official thereof." Second debunked conspiracy theory, Russiagate 2.0. CNN says, "Feds say Russia and Iran have interfered with the presidential election in October of 2020. Politico says Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinfo. Dozens of former intel officials say, more than 50 former intelligence officials signed a letter casting doubt on the providence of a New York Post story on the former vice president's son. Now, Joe Biden also mentioned this on the presidential debate stage to Donald Trump, saying that what he's referring to, the Hunter Biden laptop, is a Russian plant. Five CIA directors from both parties have confirmed this. That's how we know it's true. Turns out it's not. Here's the New York Times story titled, "Hunter Biden paid tax bill, but broad federal investigation continues. Those emails were obtained by the New York Times from a cache of files that appears to have come from a laptop abandoned by Mr. Biden in a Delaware repair shop. The email and others in the cache were authenticated by people familiar with them and with the investigation." The Hunter Biden laptop was real. So it turns out people like James Clapper, former director of National Intelligence, one of the highest alleged security clearances that exists, Mike Hayden, former director of the CIA, Leon Panetta, director of the CIA, John Brennan, director of the CIA, and 50 others all lied, saying they knew that this was Russian disinfo. They didn't know, and it wasn't. Not to mention During the same time in 2020, the New York Times ran a story, Russia secretly offered Afghan bounties on American soldiers. American intelligence officials have concluded, it's the conclusion. We did a big thing, and here is the conclusion. That a Russian military intelligence unit there's a big conspiracy, offered bounties to Taliban linked militants for killing coalition forces. Oh, they better have a ton of evidence for this, because surely they would never provoke a war with a nuclear power for a third time. I mean, Hillary Clinton did it with the 17 agencies. Biden did it with the laptop, but it could not happen a third time unless it did. ABC News, remember those Russian bounties for dead U.S. troops? April 15th, 2021, a year later. Joe Biden says, I don't understand why this president is unwilling to take on Putin when he's actually paying bounties to kill American soldiers in Afghanistan. Biden said of President Trump, speaking to Kirsten Welker of NBC News during the October 22nd presidential debate. Such a definitive statement was questionable even then. So even then, when he said it, it was a conspiracy theory. On Thursday, it became more clear that the truth of the matter is unresolved. Last fall, while Biden was a candidate, Pentagon officials told NBC News they could not substantiate that such bounties were paid. Debunked conspiracy theory number three. The Branch Davidians in 1993 defended themselves vigorously for 51 days from February 28th to April 19th against the ATF and the FBI, but then all simultaneously committed suicide at the very moment the FBI rammed tanks into their church spraying CS gas. This, of course, is ridiculous. The reason the ATF initiated their involvement was because of a suspected weapons violation, not because of crystal meth cooking, as we've heard, not because of babies being beaten, as we've heard, not because of cult members. Even if babies were being beaten, so to speak, why is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Organization responding to something like that? Of course, it was the FBI ramming tanks inside, spraying CS gas, killing 76 Branch Davidians, 25 of whom were children, 2 of whom were pregnant women. Number 4, there is a free market conspiracy where big business wants no regulation so they can exploit the rest of us. This is verifiable. Only these 60 companies were in the Fortune 500 in both 1955 and 2016. So companies actually go in and out of business in the free market because people can voluntarily disassociate with not only other human beings, but with other companies. And a number of these companies, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, Pfizer, a lot of these are heavily subsidized by the state or their co-conspirators with governments in achieving their ends. So there would be even more turnover in an actual free market. The reason you can pin this on capitalism as opposed to the state, where there is a high amount of turnover and change in the marketplace, is simply because we know that capitalism, by definition, allows people to voluntarily opt out of associating with certain people for whatever reason they deem. Whereas the state, you have to chip in or they put you in a cage and shoot you if you resist. Certainly, if we lived in a time where just big business controlled everything and the consumer had no power, we'd still have monopolies like MySpace.com, AOL.com, Yahoo.com, Blockbuster Video, Sears, and A&P Grocers. Of course, none of those exist. Also, the Glass-Steagall deregulation of the 90s causing the financial crisis of 2008. This has been refuted 1,000 times. In short, Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns were two of the first most volatile banks that went under, and they were investment firms. So it wasn't because Glass-Steagall allowed commercial banks and investment firms to both cooperate with one another. It was these firms that were isolated in just investment that were overheating, so to speak, or were more volatile than banks that were able to diversify their portfolios because of Glass-Steagall deregulation. So the most volatile organizations, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, and AIG, which was an insurance company, certainly we would see these diversified banks being the most volatile if Glass-Steagall deregulation was the cause of the financial crisis. Not to mention the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, devised in 1910 by J.P. Morgan and his friends, Nelson Aldrich, Henry P. Davidson, Charles D. Norton, A. Piatt Andrew, Frank Vanderlip, Benjamin Strong, Paul Warburg, not exactly workers of the world uniting to make banking safe for the average citizen. Again, it's the people pushing the biggest regulations that are the most powerful people in the world because they will control how the regulations affect their competitors. WikiLeaks bombshell, emails show Citigroup had a major role in shaping and staffing Obama's first term. Also turns out that there was something called regulatory capture, which is a corruption of authority that occurs when a political entity, policymaker, or regulatory agency is co-opted to serve the commercial, ideological, or political interests of a minor constituency, such as a particular geographic area, industry, profession, or ideological group. Two biggest examples of this: Hank Paulson, formerly worked for Goldman Sachs, later becoming the Secretary of the Treasury; Michael R. Taylor, formerly worked at Monsanto, later became the FDA Deputy Commissioner. Two examples of big business advocating regulation: Doug McMullen and H. Lee Scott, two CEOs of Walmart, have previously come out in favor of the minimum wage. Oh, well, certainly if rich people can afford something, therefore everyone can afford that thing. So yeah, let's make it mandatory for everyone and close out every business that can't afford to compete with Walmart. Surely there can be no secondary effects, something like that. Here are the annual costs of federal regulations by firm size per employee. Small firms, meaning 20 employees or less, pay about $10,585 per employee to comply with regulations. Big corporations have what's called economies of scale, which means 500 employees or more, pay about $7,755 per employee to comply with regulations. The source of this is The Impact of Regulatory Costs on Small Firms by Nicole and Mark Crane in 2010 from the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Advocacy. Moving on, Wall Street donors reportedly favor Biden over Trump in 2020 election. Also, Amazon and Jeff Bezos specifically said, "We listen to our critics," said Jeff Bezos, as Amazon raises its minimum wage and calls for a revision of the federal minimum wage. Again, the biggest, most profitable people can afford something doesn't necessarily mean competitors can. Could Amazon have afforded that in its infancy when Jeff Bezos just came up with the idea in the 1990s? Could they have competed with, I don't know, what Sears would have been their biggest competitor? Whoever? eBay, I guess? No, of course not. PolitiFact: Goldman Sachs was Barack Obama's number one private contributor. Now, certainly Barack Obama's for the little guy. He is going against Wall Street. He's pro-Occupy Wall Street. This is all nonsense. More regulations make it so big companies can comply and smaller companies are unable to get their foot in the door. J.P. Morgan employees joined Goldman Sachs among top Obama donors. Here are the number of pages in the Federal Register from 1936 to 2016, for those of you watching on the screen. In 1936, there were very few. In 2016, you see a drastic increase, with a small dip in the early 80s from the Reagan administration to fight the hyperinflation that the Carter administration gifted us. Here is another refutation of the idea that the free market is out just to get the poor and to create inequality. Here is Thomas Sowell in his book, Basic Economics. Again, we know that these results are the result of capitalism simply because they come to fruition as a result of people making decisions voluntarily, as opposed to situations being imposed upon others coercively by the state or a mob or any other organization. The University of Michigan study found that among workers, Americans who were in the bottom 20% in income in 1975, approximately 95% had risen out of that bracket by 1991, including 29% who had reached the top quintile by 1991, compared to only 5% who still remained in the bottom quintile. Even among the truly rich, there is turnover. When Forbes magazine ran its first list of the 400 richest Americans in 1982, that list included 14 Rockefellers, 28 DuPonts, and 11 Hunts. 20 years later, the list included 3 Rockefellers, 1 Hunt, and no DuPonts. Just over one-fifth of the people in the 1982 Forbes list of the wealthiest Americans inherited their wealth. By 2006, however, only 2% of people on the list had inherited their wealth. Between 1996 and 2005, the income of individuals who had been in the bottom 20% of tax filers in 1996 increased by 91% by 2005, and the income of those individuals who were in the top 1% by 1996 had fallen by 26%. Individuals making $50,000 a year or less fell by 2% between 2007 and 2009. The incomes of people making $1 million or more fell by nearly 50%. Sowell says, in reality, most of the great fortunes in American history have resulted from someone's figuring out how to reduce costs so as to be able to charge lower prices and therefore gain a mass market for the product. Henry Ford did this with automobiles, Rockefeller with oil, Carnegie with steel, Sears, Penny, Walton, and other department store chain founders with a variety of products, not to mention Steve Jobs with the iPhone, not to mention Jeff Bezos with books. Debunk conspiracy theory number 5. Without mandatory minimums, all quality would be as low as possible and wages would be as low as possible. The reality is, according to the BLS.gov, about 1% of full-time workers are paid the federal minimum wage. If you adjust for state minimum wages, it's about 3% of all workers. Also, certainly, if I can go to college for $0 an hour, I can work an internship for $1 an hour or $1.50 an hour. It's my labor. It's my time. I will spend it how I choose. My body, my choice. This was refuted by the Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises in a book titled Planning for Freedom. What makes wages rise and renders the material conditions of the wage earners more satisfactory is improvement in the technological equipment. American wages are higher than wages in other countries because the capital invested per head of the worker is greater, and the plants are thereby in the position to use the most efficient tools and machines. What is called the American way of life is the result of the fact that the United States has put fewer obstacles in the way of savings and capital accumulation than other nations. There is only one way that leads to an improvement of the standard of living of the wage-earning masses: the increase in the amount of capital invested. He goes on to say, it's not only capital investment, it's also the importance of competition. Debunk conspiracy theory number 6, climate change is going to kill us. Quoting from Don't Burn This Book by Dave Rubin, the world's death rate from extreme weather is lower than it's been in any decade since 1900, according to the Reason Foundation. From 1920 to 1929, there were 241 deaths a year per million people. but that figure reduced to 5.4 deaths per million between 2000 and 2010. This includes deaths by everything from hurricanes to floods and, quote, extreme temperatures. Also important to note that more people die every year from the cold. About 600,000 people a year die from the heat. 4.5 million die from cold weather. The reason this doesn't hit our radar is because when people die of cold, it's prolonged. It takes very long. When people die of a heat wave, it is almost immediate. Also, the world is more green as a result of having more CO2, which is a fertilizer. Also, we have the incentive to create things like planting trees in places like Botswana versus Zimbabwe. In Botswana, there's a lot of private property. In Zimbabwe, there is almost none. This makes it so if you plant a seed, it's worth more in year one than it was a year before. It's worth more after 10 years, worth even more after 20 years, because investors can own the private property and it will yield payoffs in the long run. As far as, well, what if we're under sea level? Well, already 110 million people worldwide live under sea level. What they use are dikes. People in South Vietnam, Holland, and central London already live below sea level. So the progressive assumes that a problem exists, therefore it's inevitably going to hurt us. It assumes that no human beings will respond to that shortcoming that exists in the world through any voluntary means that will be beneficial. So they assume bad thing is happening, therefore this group called government must get tons of money and tons of power. Total logical fallacy. In the end, they'll say, well, look, maybe it's not going to kill us all, but slowly it's going to depreciate our standard of living. Stephen Moore wrote a book about this titled, Who's the Fairest of Them All? The Truth About Opportunity Taxes and Wealth in America. So he measures the well-being of the poor, because certainly if climate change is killing us, the poor will be worse off. The rich could just buy new houses and whatnot. He has this table here, according to the Dallas Federal Reserve Census Bureau data. All households in 1970, he then compares to poor households in the year 2005. Surely, if climate change were getting worse and worse and worse, we would see the poor getting worse and worse and worse along with it, while the rich did fine. Here are Stephen Moore's findings when it comes to the percentage of households that own the following when it comes to all households in 1970 versus poor households in 2005. In 2005, more poor households have a washing machine, clothes dryer, dishwasher, refrigerator, stove, microwave, color TV, video cassette, DVD, personal computer, telephone, cell phone, and air conditioner. Not exactly the poverty that we are constantly told will become of us if we don't quickly give Bill Gates the keys to planet Earth. Debunk conspiracy number 7. The gender pay gap is, quote, not myth, it's math, according to Barack Obama, former president of America. The problem is the, quote, gender wage gap doesn't account for a number of things. It just says women, on average, earn less than men, on average. It doesn't account for the number of hours worked, or which occupation the sexes have, or which college degrees the sexes have, or how often the sexes seek a raise, not to mention the age wealth gap. 40-year-olds get paid more than 16-year-olds. Therefore, we need a 16-year-old Lives Matter movement that needs to go around looting and rioting and starting fires. This way we can have equal pay. Of course not. Now, it's differences in experience also. If you look at differences with men and women, men have a higher homelessness rate and a higher suicide rate. It's not the result of female supremacy, and we need a male Lives Matter movement. This is the result of different groups making different decisions. Here is a citation from 2018, the U.S. Census Bureau Median U.S. household income by selected ethnic group. You would think, certainly, that virtually all incomes are equal since everyone's equal. And then you say, well, actually, because there's so much racism in America where whites are, you know, supremacist, that whites have the highest income and everyone else is far below them, you know, because of all the racism in America. Here are a list of groups in America that have higher incomes than whites. Indian, Taiwanese, Chinese, Japanese, Pakistani, Filipino, Indonesian, Korean, Cambodian, Hmong, and Vietnamese. The solution to this is not a White Lives Matter movement. This is the result of different groups having different values and different traditions, thus yielding different outcomes. Debunk conspiracy theory number 8. McCarthyism was a hoax. This guy, Joseph McCarthy, had no justification for anything he did. He just went around trying to find witches where there were none. Turns out the reality, there were 349 Americans who had worked for the State Department who were actually conspiring with the Soviet Union. This is according to John Earl Haynes and Harvey Keller in the year 2000 in their book Venona, Decoding Soviet Espionage in America, published by Yale University Press. Major names: Alger Hiss, State Department advisor to Franklin Roosevelt at Yalta. This is where the dividing of Europe took place in 1945. Alger Hiss was also Secretary General of the United Nations Conference on International Organization. He was also the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. So thank God the progressives are focused on, you know, those Proud Boys. Because, you know, those Proud Boys might be up to something bad. But, you know, FDR advisors, UN Secretary General, President of Carnegie Endowment. Yeah, he's working for the Soviet Union, advocating communism, giving half of Europe to Stalin. No need to focus on that guy. Harry Dexter White, senior U.S. Treasury Department official, who helped set American financial policy toward the allies of the Second Great War. Klaus Fuchs, last name F-U-C-H-E-S, a German theoretical physicist and spy who worked at Los Alamos during the Manhattan Project and passed atomic secrets to the Soviet Union. Jules and Ethel Rosenberg, obviously, this is one that everyone knows. Jules Rosenberg was an engineer at the Army Signal Corps Engineering Laboratories, and him and his wife passed the atomic secrets to Joseph Stalin. Also, in England, the Soviet Union was operating with people like Kim Philby, a British intelligence officer, and Donald MacLean, appointed head of the American Department in the Foreign Office, a specialist on British policy and relations between the Warsaw Pact, Soviet Union, and the North American Treaty Organization. Debunk conspiracy theory number 9. Education funding is decreasing because the rich want us all to be stupid. Here is Cora DeAngelis, the greatest expert in this area, in a tweet: inflation adjusted public school spending per student in the United States. In 1970, there was an average of $6,503 spent per student. In the year 2018, there were $15,946 spent per student, a 145% real increase since 1970. The term real means adjusted for inflation. So no, there is not a decrease in education spending. The problem is the progressives look out and say, well, people aren't voting for our policies, therefore they're idiots, and therefore there must not be enough spending on education, therefore the rich are decreasing education spending. Total nonsense. Before we get to number 10, the especially confrontational number 10, here are three honorable mentions. Under Barack Obama, the Syrian gas attack of his administration. This is the claim: Bashar al-Assad gassed his own citizens just because he likes to be Hitler 2.0. Now, here is how dangerous these conspiracy theories can get. Here's an email from Jake Sullivan, the current foreign policy advisor, foreign security officer to Joe Biden, the sitting president. He wrote this email to Hillary Clinton in February of 2012. It was unclassified as part of the State Department emails. He says, quote, "See last item. AQ is on our side in Syria. Otherwise, things have basically turned out as expected." AQ stands for Al-Qaeda in Syria, meaning an organization, Jabhat al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda in Syria, is siding with America to fight Bashar al-Assad. Now, certainly, if we really thought that Al-Qaeda is an evil terrorist organization hell-bent on destroying America and ushering in a planetary caliphate, we would not be siding with them against Assad. We'd be siding with Assad against them. And we'd be siding with Russia and Assad against them. Turns out this is all fake. For further information, check out Aaron Mate from The Nation in his research on the OPCW, the Organization for Prohibition on Chemical Weapons. Second honorable mention, what are the chances somebody with COVID must be hospitalized? Half of Democrats think that it's about 70% of people will be hospitalized, or rather 50% of Democrats believe 41% will be hospitalized. The correct answer is less than 1%. The reason this is important is because by repeating the same thing again and again and again, the Democrats will say, well, this is not a small issue. It's a big issue. And only a big issue can be dealt with a big response. Therefore, only a big, powerful government run by Bill Gates, Tony Fauci, and Tedros of the World Health Organization can actually solve this issue. Finally, Barack Obama, Libya in 2014, from The Guardian, Gaddafi supplies troops with Viagra to encourage mass rape, claims diplomat. U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice has also said, without offering evidence, that Iran was helping Syria to depress dissent. Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, made the claim while accusing Gaddafi of numerous human rights abuses. Earlier in the week, Rice also claimed, without offering any evidence, that Iran is helping Syria suppress dissent. So, this basically went to court. The International Criminal Court, as you can see the documents on the screen. If we scroll to the table of contents in the International Criminal Court documents, we have the introduction on page 4, the statement of facts on page 5, and then in section E, as in Eric, we have the summary of evidence and other information establishing reasonable grounds to believe that Muammar Gaddafi's committed crimes within the jurisdiction of the court pursuant to Article 52D of the Rome Statute. That begins on page 17 and ends on page 71. You can see that every single page, if you're watching on YouTube or Odyssey or Float, every single page has been redacted. The Gaddafi giving his troops Viagra as a tool for mass rape was completely fake. And Susan Rice spread this debunked conspiracy theory to the United Nations. Final conspiracy theory that has been debunked is the conspiracy theory of, well, first, I'm going to give you a number of names. Tell me what these names have in common. Mention in the comments below. Tony Timpa, Kelly Thomas, Justine Damond, Duncan Lemp, Dylan Noble, Margarita Victoria Brooks, Robert Sykin, Chad Michael Breinhold, Daniel Schaefer, and Ashley Babbitt. If you guessed those are unarmed whites killed by police, you are correct. The final debunked conspiracy theory is the racism or white supremacy conspiracy theory. America in 2022 is currently a white supremacist country, says the left. This has been debunked probably 100,000 times, but I am getting the urge to do it again. The claim is that Well, all I see on the media is all these unarmed non-whites getting shot. Therefore, it's a result of racism. Well, don't you think maybe the fact that the police have the right to give people orders and other people have the legal obligation to obey those orders, maybe it's government supremacy instead of white supremacy? They don't find that too interesting. They also don't find the names that I listed earlier very interesting. Unarmed white person, Ashley Babbitt, Daniel Schaefer, and Tony Tembo, and Kelly Thomas were all killed on camera, but the media is not too interested. Okay, so I've listed some names. Maybe I'm just picking out a few. Let's look at the data. Turns out, according to Roland Fryer, a black economist from Harvard University, his paper is titled An Empirical Analysis of Racial Differences in Police Use of Force, published in July of 2017. Blacks are 23.5% less likely to be shot by the police. He also says in that paper, which I've read, that police are more likely to get physical with blacks, but less likely to shoot them. Also, a paper by Washington State University titled The Reverse Racism Effect by Lewis James, Stephen James, Brian J. Vila, published in May 2016 of Criminology and Public Policy Journal, found that police were three times less likely to shoot unarmed black suspects than unarmed whites. Again, this is adjusted per capita, which means per interaction with police. So, moving on. 80% of interracial violence in America, certainly in a racist white supremacist country, the vast majority would be white on black. Turns out 80% of interracial violence is black on white. This is according to black professor Dr. Wilfred Riley of Kentucky State University. Now, one might say, oh, well, you know, you libertarians don't want any affirmative action. You don't want any laws in favor of helping blacks. Obviously, you're against them. Well, to be clear, what we advocate is no person having the right to initiate violence against another. So this just means that no government would have the right to mandate by law that one person favor another because of their race for something like jobs or entrance into an organization or anything else. So as sad as we are that 20 million Chinese people were killed by the Japanese, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, we don't believe there should be mandated discrimination against the Japanese in favor of the Chinese because of that atrocity that began in 1933. So let's look at Thomas Sowell's book, published in 1986, Civil Rights, Rhetoric or Reality. Is it possible for someone to both advocate a free market and be sympathetic toward the plight of blacks in America with the history of slavery, Jim Crow, lynchings, etc.? Here's Thomas Sowell. But the number of blacks in professional, technical, and other high-level occupations more than doubled in the decade preceding the Civil Rights Act of 1964. In other occupations, gains by blacks were greater during the 1940s when there was practically no civil rights legislation than during the 1950s. In various skilled trades, the income of blacks relative to whites more than doubled. Affirmative action hiring pressures make it costly to have no minority employees, but continuing affirmative action pressures at the promotion and discharge phases also make it costly to have minority employees who do not work out well. The net effect is to increase the demand for highly qualified minority employees while decreasing the demand for less qualified minority employees or for those without a sufficient track record to reassure employers. So the goalpost is moved by the progressives, and they say, not only is America racist and a white supremacist, the reason we have to believe this is because the current president of America is a white supremacist. We know this because he said Nazis are fine people. Of course, they never say National Socialist. They just summarize and say Nazi. And their evidence is, well, after Charlottesville in 2017, he said Nazis are fine people. So if he thinks they're fine, he's probably one of them. Problem is, of course, Trump never said this. Of course, you would have heard it from Netanyahu that he disavows Trump. And they would have endorsed whoever ran against him and called for his impeachment. Here is the actual quote from Donald Trump. Quote, "I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists. Okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had some troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in that other group too." So obviously, the president of America never said Nazis are fine people. So once this is refuted, they go back to, well, the police just indiscriminately murder blacks. How do we know this? Well, here is the New York Post summarizing a study of progressives. They say, overall, nearly half of surveyed liberals, 44%, estimated roughly between 1,000 and 10,000 unarmed black men were killed, whereas 20% of conservatives estimate the same. They think between 1,000 and 10,000 unarmed blacks are killed by police every year. The number in that year was actually 27. This is a conspiracy theory that has been debunked numerous times. So once they lose that, they go back to, well, let's look at the history. Once you've refuted the police are racist, once you've refuted the president's a white supremacist and that the average white is out to get the average black, considering black on white violence is higher than white on black violence, they say, well, let's look at the history of America. That proves America is racist. Not even close. Here is my summary of Douglas Murray's section on history in his book, The War on the West. In 1952, Samuel Kramer, one of the world's leading Assyriologists, an expert in Sumerian history and Sumerian language, translated tablets which were found in Iraq dated between 2100 BC and 2050 BC. The tablets are known as the Code of Ur-Nammu, U-R-N-A-M-M-U, one of the oldest legal texts known to mankind. In the list of 32 laws, the word slave is found 9 times. It turns out slavery is maybe the least unique thing about Western civilization, contrary to vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine's claim that America created slavery. Murray points out the best available figures proposed by scholars such as Professor Ralph Austin of the University of Chicago is that somewhere between 11 and 17 million Africans were traded east in the Arab-run slave trade, whereas at the height of American slavery, there were 4 million. Here is the lesson, which could be summarized by Michael Humer in his excellent book, Knowledge, Reality, and Value. He is referring to the corporate press and saying the media basically sells you BS. So anything the media says, take it with half a grain of salt. He says, I've noticed that this BS tends to fall into 3 main categories. First, ideological propaganda. If you learn about an issue from a partisan source, for instance, you read about gun control on a gun control advocacy website, or you hear the day's news from a conservative radio show, you will get pretty much 100% propaganda. Facts will be exaggerated, cherry-picked, deceptively phrased, or otherwise misleading. Normally, you will have no way of guessing the specific way in which the information is deceptive, making the information essentially worthless for drawing inferences. Second, sensationalism. Mainstream news sources make money by getting as many people as possible to watch their shows, read their articles, and so on. To do that, they try to make everything sound as scary, exciting, outrageous, or otherwise as dramatic as possible. Third, laziness. Most people who write for public consumption are lazy and lack expertise about the things they write about. If a story has some technical aspect, example, science news, journalists probably won't understand it and may get basic facts backwards. Also, they often just talk to one or a few sources and print whatever those sources say, even if the sources have obvious biases. So, point number one of this very long talk is that the media is just as biased toward politics as the average priest is to the Catholic Church. They are both self-interested. Second, the true divide in the world is not man versus woman, black versus white, old versus young, rich versus poor. The true divide is those who achieve their ends in life voluntarily versus those who achieve their ends violently by using the state to initiate violence against peaceful people. Thank you for watching Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone, and the Libertarian Institute.